The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, as you know, Brokenomics is a series that covers both economics and broken systems, and there's probably no system more broken than that of the Middle East political situation, in particular in reference to Gaza. And of course, this is a topical issue at the moment. It's something that we touched on the podcast last week, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper into this, and I'm delighted to be joined by Bo. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Is this the first time you've been on Brokenomics, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I've had you on Epochs two or three times, but yeah,
so
this
good.
Is my first Brokenomics.
Good to get you on.
Yeah. No.
And because we touched on this before, didn't we? But we had to do it in a very compressed way, and you know, it was difficult to, and we were reacting to recent events as well. But I just wanted to have a conversation where we dove a little bit deeper into this, although you made a very good point to me before we came on, which is this is a subject which you just cannot get nuanced enough on.
Right, yeah.
So to just set expectations for everybody, we are going to be as nuanced as we can be in a 90-minute discussion. If you want Uber level of nuance, there are probably a good 50 books that you can go and read.
Yeah.
But we will do as much justice to the subject as we can in the space of about 90 minutes or so.
Even given that much time, you can only really hope to scratch the surface, because we're biting off a giant chunk here. Really, yeah. A giant, giant thing. So we're still going to have to essentially whiz through it.
Mm.
And nearly everything we say, you could go into tons of detail.
Oh, yeah.
Nearly any given thing we're going to talk about.
I'm sure you could pull out any sentence and then do another 90 minutes on that one sentence. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But I think it is important to cover it at a reasonably high level and a clip and draw people's attention to the relevant points, because there is a lot of discussion going on at the moment. And, you know, you often see, for example, students look at this and come with a very surface level analysis of what's going on one side or the other. And actually, it is a genuinely deep topic. And there are reasons why we've ended up in the situation that we're in. So I think it's probably fair that we talk about a quick overview of the deep history of it, basically bring us up to speed, but really pick up our story in the 1980s. And the emergence of Hamas and what they have done and the response that it has led and how it has got us to this point that we're in at the moment.
Okay.
So starting on the ancient history, which I'm sure you'd love to go deeper into if you could, but maybe in another one. Let's just talk about the deep history of the place and its location, because it has been a historically significant location for basically forever. Mm-hmm. As far as I can determine, and it seems to me that the reason it is not because it has any particularly spectacular farmland or natural resources or anything like that. What it has, it is on a nexus point between multiple empires, and therefore it has tremendous strategic advantage. And I believe I'm right in saying that a whole swathe of the big names from the bygone era of empires have at one time or another occupied what we now call the Holy Land.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, it goes back. It's one of the places in the world that has got some of the oldest archaeology. The oldest. I'm talking way back into deep time. I'm talking about some of the earliest midden pits and fire hearths ever. Like in and around the Sea of Galilee.
So even predating, say, the pyramids, for example.
Yeah, oh God, long. I'm talking deep time, like 10,000 BC, 15,000 BC, just after the Ice Age.
Okay.
Or even before the end of the last Ice Age, there's archaeology of people living in and around Galilee, Sea of Galilee. So it goes back that far. But if we're just going to talk about ancient history, sort of biblical history, or if we go back to sort of the Bronze Age, or the Bronze Age collapse, or the times when Abraham was supposed to have lived, or after the age of King David, when Pharaohs and Assyrians and Babylonians and Hittites and all these types of people ruled the world.
Yes.
Yeah, it depends where you want to start, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I was happy just to you know, list off a couple of the names. I mean, as you have, I mean, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, Babylonians, Romans. I think all of them at one time or another had an outpost, you know, some sort of system there, because it was a nexus point between multiple trade routes. So it's always been the case that there has been people moving through this area, and the superpower of the day, whichever it is, wanted to control it because it is that nexus point.
Mm. Well, the Romans are Johnny-come-latelys, if anything.
Yes.
But yeah, like some of the earliest, among the earliest sort of documented, even saying that, you'd have to put it in inverted commas, some of the earliest documented battles between probably the Hittites and the Egyptians take place somewhere in the Levant, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Tyre, which is a little island, well, it's not an island anymore, it's got a causeway to it, but there was the island of Tyre, which is just off the coast of modern-day Lebanon, just north of Israel. It's got an extremely long Phoenician history, where we talked about we can only scratch the surface. I mean, here, we're really only scratching the surface.
Very, very, very light gloss on this.
Yeah.
And for a long time, for the sake of this discussion, let's go back 4,000 years, the origins of Judaism. Although, actually, I don't think that Judea became a state until maybe about 3,000 years ago.
Right, well, so first of all, already there's a landmine. What is a state? They're kind of really more modern things, a nation state.
Yes.
But nonetheless, you've got, well, what you had is the 12 tribes of Israel. And it was supposed to be King Saul. And then you've got David and then Solomon. In the age of Saul, roughly 1000 BC, supposed to have united them. And they were always fractious, so they didn't stay completely united for all that long. The sort of the high watermark of the sort of later Assyrians, you've basically got two kingdoms, the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. Two kingdoms that are both populated by Hebrews or Jewish people.
Yes.
It's a fairly complicated thing to get your mind around. Exactly what it was and what it looked like, what their polity was, and at different points. Because we're just talking about centuries and centuries and centuries just there.
Yes. So, appreciated we can't delve into that too much, but essentially there was something which modern Jews can point to and say, look, there was a Judea, or there was an Israel, or there was something that they can point to that goes back at least 3,000 years.
Yeah, right, yeah. If you believe the scriptures, the various scriptures, and the Jewish Bible, and the archaeology does show that they've been there for a very long time. And just very quickly to say on that, in the second half of the 20th century, modern Israeli archaeologists and historians have tried to find concrete archaeological evidence for biblical events.
I see,
and largely failed.
Right.
But that's going back, if they want to try and find evidence of the story of Moses or Noah or Abraham, actual hard evidence, which is way back. I mean, that is in deep in the Bronze Age. And there doesn't seem to be a great deal of evidence there, unfortunately. Well, however,
yes,
it's certainly...
I mean, it sounds like a challenging task anyway.
Right. But there's certainly, there's certainly been Jewish people there since at least sort of 1300.
BC. Yeah.
And I already know that there'll be some Jewish people out there that are screaming at their monitor saying, I'm not doing them justice enough.
Yeah.
But that's Okay. Well, there you go. That's what you can say with
certainty. We're keeping it at a high level. So basically what
you
I'm
can
saying
say
is
that with certainty.
4,000 years ago, roughly, Judaism emerges. 3,000 years ago, there's something along the lines of a Jewish state there. 2,000 years ago, I know I'm glossing a lot here, but 2,000 years ago, Christianity emerges. And what is it, 1,400 years ago, Islam emerges. And yeah, that is a. I'm just framing
sure,
the
yeah, right.
3,000 years in a very broad brush. So then I wanted to turn to the Palestinians. So modern, what we call Palestinians, are tied to the geographic location of Palestine. Now that word, again, we could do another whole podcast on what is Palestine. It is essentially a term given by the British. I mean, is it super high level? What's Palestine?
So it does go back to the ancient times. There was a Jewish revolt. I think it was the Hadrian one in about 130, 135 AD, where the Romans decided to rename Judea. What did they call it? Like Syria Palestinia or something.
Right.
I think that's what they called it. So the word dates back to the ancient times, okay. But it was.
But that was because the Romans were having difficulties with the rebellious Jewish population, and they decided, okay, we'll sod you. Then we're going to call it something else. And
right. Hadrian sort of attempted to annihilate them.
Right.
To be honest.
Okay.
If there's any Jewish people out there, like Brett Weinstein, who holds a grudge against Titus, he could hold an even bigger grudge against Hadrian.
Okay.
Anyway, they renamed it. Then, just skipping forward.
Yeah. Eric Weinstein, I think it
was Eric?
Because
was it?
He went on holiday to Rome, and there's an Arch of Titus, which is
Arch
a big monument to a Roman emperor who killed quite a lot of Jews.
Destroyed the Second Temple.
In 70 AD. And Eric showed himself flipping the bird to this thing.
Yeah.
Although I noticed in last week. The Italians decided to light up the Arch of Titus with an Israeli flag, which is, could you not have found a different monument to light up?
Yeah, no, it's obviously very, very deliberate, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's sort of virtue signalling through the millennia.
Yes.
It's crazy. Is there no limit to boomers virtue signalling? There's no limit to it, is there?
I suspect Titus himself would have not been on board with that particular messaging.
No, he was charged with putting down a revolt and did so.
Yeah. So
I was going to say,
please do.
So after the Ottoman rule was ended by the British Army and First Viscount Allenby in 1917, the British decided, the League of Nations decided to call it Palestine. So they took that name from. It's got ancient precedent. So that's why they're called Palestinians. One quick note to say about that is that I saw just the other day an interesting interview with Golda Meir, a Israeli prime minister during the 70s. She was the prime minister during the Yom Kippur War. And she said, I'm a Palestinian. She said, we're all Palestinians. I'm just a Jewish Palestinian. There are Arab Palestinians and there's Jewish Palestinians. From 1921 to 1948, I had a Palestinian passport. Now, that sounds odd to our ears, but you've got to remember that time is a bit like an onion and it's easy to forget or just fail to see the layers below.
Yes.
But in the first half of the 20th century, or the second quarter of the 20th century, let's say, there was no Israel. So there were essentially no Israelis. They were just Jewish. They considered themselves, called themselves, according to Golda Meir, and she should know, they called themselves Jewish Palestinians. So, I mean, that sounds odd to us now,
doesn't
it?
That's interesting.
That sounds like a contradiction in terms or something. But
yes.
There you go.
Okay, so it was those, what we're sort of loosely referencing as sort of Arab Palestinians. Again, I know people will take issue with that and say, oh no, they're not Arabs. But you can look at this area and you can see that there was a deep history of people who lived in this area. So the Canaanites, is it? The Philistines, various Arab tribes. And these were largely, at different points it varies, but these were largely sort of nomadic tribes that sort of lived in the area. Although you can go back to sources like the Bible, which references Gaza. most notably in the Book of Samson. You know, the guy who pushes the temple down and brings it all down on his head.
Yeah, yeah.
So that mentions Gaza. And also, I think there's other bits in the Old Testament where they refer to the five Philistine cities.
Right.
Which, if I remember correctly, is Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, and Gath. And right. I believe the last two are now just archaeological sites. But of course, Gaza still exists, and Ashkelon and Ashdod are now cities in modern day Israel.
Yeah, Ashkelon's just north of Gaza.
Right.
In fact, Hamas attacked it.
Right.
It's just on the border with Gaza. But yeah, so there's quite a few things to say. You've got ancient peoples like the Canaanites, or the Philistines or something. You know, they don't exist anymore.
Mm.
The Babylonians wiped out the Philistines, for example. So I've heard some people say that the Palestinians are modern day Philistines, but that's just wrong. That's completely incorrect.
Right.
The word is
okay.
Not the same word or anything.
Yeah, because I did want to ask you about that, because the Philistines were a distinct sort of cultural group that lived in the Levant. But they kind of, well, I mean, they suffered significant setbacks from the Assyrians and the Babylonians.
could say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's understating it somewhat. But, I mean, they kind of lost any sort of cohesive identity in the Iron Age.
Well, right, yeah, yeah. But having said all of that, there's sort of, continuously always been some people there.
Yes.
So one of the things that was said...
The name changes significantly, and some...
It's never been an empty land.
Yes.
So in 1948, when Ben-Gurion and the Zionists declared it an Israel into existence, one of the things that was said, one of the sort of pro-Israeli slogans or sayings that was said, is that it's a land without people for a people without land.
Yes.
You know, the people without land.
Doesn't really exist anywhere on Earth.
The European Jews.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, there's no such thing. So the people without land, the European Jews, would go to a land without people as though that part of the world was empty. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't.
Yes, well, it was very, very underdeveloped, though, to be fair. So, I mean, there's plenty
of villages there, to be honest. I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people there.
Hmm.
So it just wasn't just there sitting empty. Yeah. And even if it was, it doesn't really necessarily mean it's okay. So, for example, when the British took over the island of Singapore, that really was empty.
Okay.
But yet still today, some people claim that was just a wrong thing to do. It's just a colonial crime. To just take that bit of land and develop it and make it your own. So even if there was no one there, can you just declare a bit of land is now your sovereign land? Well, that's sort
but then
of part
as you,
of the
as,
whole,
as you say, there were...
That is part of the whole problem.
What people who would have called themselves Jewish Palestinians living there as well. I guess the point that I'm making is that you can point to deep, deep historical roots for the Jewish people in that area.
Yes,
and they have done a much better job of remaining a cohesive identity throughout the millennia. The Palestinians can also point to groups, but it's much more fragmented with the Palestinians, because they can say, okay, well, I'm sure there is, you know, DNA from, you know, the Canaanites or the Philistines or various other groups, but they've been so fragmented and sort of washed around and so on. Turn nomadic, you know, had some sort of settlement and so on, that it's just genuinely so much harder to have a coherence with the Palestinian group, although we acknowledge that they have also been there for a very long time as well, in some form or another.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, definitely. It's a difficult thing. I think there's many layers. There's more than one layer, isn't there? There's sort of a layer of ethnicity, a layer of nationality, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And then there's a religious layer as well.
Mm.
So certainly there have been Islamic people there since very soon after the life of Muhammad.
Mm.
Or even before he died, possibly.
Mm.
So the Islamic tradition has been there since the 7th century
AD.
But yeah, there were non-Islamic Arab-related people long before that even.
Yeah.
But one thing we must quickly say, because some fedora tipper will mention it, that the true Arabs, the sort of the Arabian Peninsula Arabs, are a bit different to what we would call the Palestinians, a little bit different. It's like confusing a Swedish person with a Portuguese person. It's like they're quite very similar ethnically. They might have the same religion and all sorts of things. They're not exactly the same. So like some people think of the Egyptians as Arabs. Well, they're not the same as Central Arabian Bedouin, or the people of southern Iraq are Arabs.
Yes.
Or that the Syrians and Lebanese are Arabs. It's like it's not quite the same. There are nuances, and there's all sorts of things going on. There's sort of the Druze people and the Circassians and various types of sub ethnicities. I don't know how to say it exactly, but just need to be careful. There's sort of the true original Arabs, should we say, the original Arabs that live in Mecca and Medina and that part of the world.
So exactly right. But I guess what I guess where I'm coming at with this is I'm trying to debunk the ultra simplistic narratives that you often hear on university campuses, which can go one of two ways. One way is to say, the Jews basically just turned up. There was an existing Palestinian state occupying exactly the borders of what is now modern day Israel. And they came in and sort of marched them out at gunpoint and basically just moved into their houses and stuff like that. This was a underdeveloped land. Unless you're saying there were villages there, but you know, the Jews do have a deep history in this area. There's been continuous Jewish occupation, not occupation in military terms, but Jewish people living there.
I don't know if it is continuous. There may have been some. I imagine there were always at least a small amount, but not really continuous. No.
Okay.
Well, it would have been continuous, but probably certainly on a very, very small scale. It wasn't until the late 19th century that you start getting tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Jewish people moving back. So I'm not saying that there was a complete break. I don't know.
Yes.
But
Again, we're getting into the complications. Right, it's so difficult, isn't it? But I just wanted to debunk the simple narrative that, you know, that this is, I mean, obviously, if in ancient times it was called Judea, you know, it's there for a reason. So just saying there are roots on both sides. And likewise, the other narrative to debunk is the one that you've also talked about, which is, you know, a land without a people, a people without a land. I also want to debunk the other side of it, which is to say that it was, because sometimes you hear people say, you know, it's basically just swampland or something like that, and there was nobody living there. That's desert. Also not true.
Right, yeah.
It genuinely is the case that you've got two peoples who have deep roots in this area of varying strength at different times. And it's just not as easy to say that one or other has just turned up.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
One thing I would say, though, is that if you're debunking the idea that some Jewish people turned up in the interwar years.
Large numbers
or just after World War II and sort of threw out a load of Arab Palestinians. That's sort of, well, that is true, though.
Yes.
There's a thing called what they call the Nekva, the catastrophe, where in the late 40s, 1947, 48, the precursors to the IDF or the early Jewish paramilitaries did just forcibly move lots of people out of their villages and force them into places like the West Bank.
What's the 2-minute version of that? Because of course, you know, the British basically, this is early on, I think probably pre-World War II, but you can correct me, basically said, okay, well, this is going to be, Jewish Palestine or whatever term they wanted to call it. And then they flip-flopped on that and basically pleased nobody. And they said, okay, well, now we're going to have a Palestinian bit as well. So, you know, what was going on there? Was it the British were basically dividing up, doing their map thing, drawing lines, and then saying, okay, people need to move from here to there? Well, what was the short version of what's going on there?
Well, so I guess you'd have to quickly go back to World War One, and when the Ottoman Empire was pushed out after the war at Versailles, and when the League of Nations was created, they decided to partition big chunks of what we now know as Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, all that area of the map. And lots of it, the more northern bits, very roughly speaking, the more northern bits, Syria bits, went to France, and a lot of the central, more southern bits went to Britain. And there was portions within that, and one of it was the Palestinian, it was called the British Palestinian Mandate. That was its name. Mm. Now you've got the Jordan River, which is sort of a fairly obvious border to use. So there's things like that, and then there's the Gulf of Aqaba. You know the Sinai Desert? Maybe in post we can put up a map so you can see that V-shaped Sinai Desert. And on one side
that seems pretty empty to me.
It's largely desert. Yeah, yeah. There were settlers in there, but we can maybe get onto that when we get into the more of the 70s. Mm. But you've got that V-shape and the two waterways either side of it leading into the Red Sea. Yeah. It's like a
triangle with two rivers. And on one side you've got Egypt and you've got the absolute breadbasket there of Cairo.
Yeah.
And then on the other side is
the Gulf of Aqaba with the small town of Aqaba right at the top of it. So anyway, what I only mention all this stuff is that some of the borders are sort of geography dictates where they'll be. That was the point I was going to make.
I see. And some were lines drawn on maps.
So some are completely artificial and some are sort of obvious. Yeah. You're obviously going to use one side of the Gulf of Aqaba to be Arabia and the other side to be the Palestinian Mandate and that sort of thing. Okay. So
I think we touched on that, you know, there are two peoples conflicting over the same land. You go back to biblical times, and the kingdom of Judea would have been fighting the Philistines, and we've got into how there's no necessarily direct connections there. But the point very, very loosely is that there's sort of been two people sparring in this area for a very long time.
Yeah, or two religions. I mean, I think you can't really ignore the religion aspect to it.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back a lot longer than Islam. But yes, I mean, certainly in the last, whatever it is, 1300 years, that has been the clash.
You're right, yeah. Mm. I mean, if you look at the Crusader years, when the Frankish, and even that's an umbrella term, when the Frankish Crusaders sacked and took Jerusalem in 1099, they were, of course, Christians. They were interested in Jerusalem because of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, not because of Mount Moriah or because of the Dome of the Rock or the Al-Aqsa Mosque or anything like that. They were there because of Christianity. So the kingdoms of Ultramar, you know, there's religion plays a massive part in this. Ethnicity is one thing. Mm-hmm. But of course, I mean, I think it was a Family Guy joke, and it is a joke in bad taste. But Peter Griffin at one point says he can't tell the difference between an Israeli and an Arab Palestinian.
She's always trying to make me be social. Cocktail parties, school functions, that time we planted trees in Jerusalem. What? Look, all I'm saying is put an Israeli guy next to an Arab guy and I can't tell a difference.
Necessarily. Right. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they're just worlds apart in terms of ethnicity.
Yes.
They're Semitic people. They're all Semitic people.
Yes.
It's the religious aspect which... What do
we mean by the term Semitic?
Well, that's just one of the ethnicities in the world. Mm. And yeah, it's that part of the world, that whole part of the world, the Near and Middle East. Mm. So Arabs and... Do Persians count? I'm not sure. But Arabs and Jewish people are both of the Semitic type. It's funny now. Well, not funny, haha. Funny, interesting to note that the term... anti-Semite, or to be anti-Semitic.
I never hear that applied against people who are questioning Muslims or Arabs.
Right, yeah. A hatred against Arabs.
Yes.
It would be weird to say you're an anti-Semite for doing that. Yeah, but yet technically that is exactly, would be the same thing. It's of quite a broad, like Slavic people or Nordic people.
Right.
There's Semitic people. It's on that sort of level.
Okay.
So it's a very broad, it's actually a very broad thing. But both Arabs and Jewish people would be Semite.
So let's jump ahead a bit now, because we've covered there's a long history in two people in that area, but we really want to make the focus of this episode about much more recent events.
Okay, yeah, right.
We want to try and get into the 80s and 90s. Okay. But I think we need to stop off at 1967 along the way. And I'm talking about particularly, you know, June 5th to 10th.
Well, one thing I would we have to say just super quick is 1948 when the British mandate came to an end and Ben-Gurion and the early Zionists declared independence for Israel. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the Nekva, when they moved a lot of people out of the land, they just claimed as their own. So that's sort of, for someone like Hamas, that's the original sin as far as Hamas are concerned. They're not interested in a two-state solution ever, under any circumstances. They're not interested in any of it. Whilst Israel exists, the whole of Israel is an occupation. Not just Gaza and the West Bank and the Golan Heights. No, all of Israel is a wrongness to them.
Yes.
That started in 1948. So we have to mention that. We don't have to go into any more detail than that, but it has to be mentioned.
Yeah, I will mention later on Hamas's charter, which says in no certain on terms, no, all of the Jews have to be driven away or killed. It's just, it's very emphatic.
There's no compromise to be had.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Right.
From the river to the sea, the River Jordan to the sea, the Mediterranean.
Yes.
All of Israel then.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.